sun, on the trail there's a righteous tale of a small man with mountains of pride.
It was really sad for me to turn that down.
Yeah, right?
I love that fucking song.
Yeah. So good.
You know what happened was actually when I was watching it again, I put the subtitles up because I wanted to know what they were saying. I started to wonder if Amazon subtitles were just like closed caption subtitles, like it's actually doing it like AI, like in the moment, because like the stuff they were saying made no sense. And I hope that that the actual lyrics for the song actually make a little more sense.
I watched it the first time around with subtitles on automatically, mm-hmm. and it didn't.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
This is, what are we called? Watch this. It's good that we know the name of our show. Across from me is Alex Bellow, not Alex Bellows.
No, I'm not Greek. I'm just Alex Bellow, just the 1-0.
And who's sitting across from you, Alex?
Across from me is Stephanie Italian Explosion.
Hello, everybody.
Caplano.
Yeah.
Of course, I am Paul Klein. I don't know why I said, of course. Like, we're all just like, I'm a fucking celebrity.
Of course.
Of course. I am Paul Klein. You must have heard of me. I've written 4 failed blogs. And
most prestigious member of the Florida Film Critics Circle.
Yes. And I think I won an award for writing for most failed blogs. So, nice. Yeah. Fly right for you. You're going down.
So stupid.
Before we talk about our movie today, Hundreds of Beavers, I just want to let our audience know that there's a little awkwardness in the air. Because my podcast co-host accused me of sniffing him yesterday.
Yeah.
And I think we still haven't gotten over that. We need to air our grievances here.
Oh, yeah. That's actually why Stephanie is in here with us today, to make sure you don't sniff me. We were just standing there having a pleasant conversation, and I see Paul leaning over. And it looked like he was trying to sniff me inconspicuously, but he did a terrible job of it. And I got a little offended. I think we're good now.
We're good now. Yeah. So just so you all know, I saw a spot on the carpet of the lab that we work in that I manage. And so I care about these things. I don't want spots on my carpet. And I leaned in for a closer look. And apparently I am a heavy breather. So apparently I breathed in and Alex suddenly goes, bro, what the fuck? Like puts his hands up like a bro at a club. Because someone was messing with his girl.
Someone bumps in and spills his drink.
Someone spilled his drink on his shoes, on his spats. And I'm just like, well, I don't know what's going on. There's a spot on the floor. It looks like blood. We still don't know what it is.
Yeah, we'll never know.
It's still there, right?
Is it? I haven't checked. I'm not sure.
Well, I'm not going to check. That's your area. I don't want to be accused of things again.
No, it's okay. I've been over it since yesterday. It's the people are trying to divide us. They've been.
They are, especially Jessica. Probably Stephanie too, but. So now that that's out of the way, we have that settled. I think we all feel a little bit more comfortable. Let's take a walk down a movie lane.
Okay.
And today we're discussing, as you may have gathered from the opening song, we are discussing Hundreds of Beavers, which I'm curious what Stephanie thinks. So like Alex and I have seen Hundreds of Beavers. Stephanie has not seen it. At the end of this podcast, I'll be curious what Stephanie thinks actually the movie is about from what the things that we're going to talk about without context, I think.
Okay. Should be interesting. I counted at least 100 beavers when I saw the movie. There might have been more, but I counted at least 100.
But maybe. Only like 6 of them were. They only like shot with like 6 costumes.
Yeah. They did that for. Well, we'll get more. We'll get into.
We'll
that
get
later,
into that. Yeah. Let's actually start with how this all kind of came about. So we did mention the Florida Film Critics Group, which is a critics group that I belong to. They were talking about this movie a lot, and so I was like, you know what, I want to watch it, and it was for free on Tubi. So I took a look at it and fell in love. Mm-hmm. I was just like, this movie's hilarious. And then I came to work and I told a bunch of people, a handful of people, I said, you guys should watch this movie. And I think that this should just show you how much people trust me because not a single person watched the fucking movie based on my recommendation. The closest I got, I think, Alex, you said when you flew to New York, you went on a trip to New York, you said you watched like 10, 15 minutes of it.
Yeah, I watched the first like 20 minutes of the movie and then I stopped watching it because I decided to watch something else on the plane. And that was, yeah. But I eventually got back to it for the purpose
for the podcast. Yeah. Yes. Because then I started harassing them. And then even we had faculty coming down going, you know, you need to watch Hundreds of Beavers. And I was like, yeah, I know. I've seen it. Can you please tell my tutors the same thing? And so now here we are. You've finally seen it. What did you choose to watch instead on the airplane?
That's a good question.
See, you wouldn't have forgotten Hundreds of Beavers, but, you know.
Yeah, I think on the plane I might have seen – I'll get back to you on that. I'm not entirely sure what I saw on the plane.
And what actually – made you stop Hundreds of Beavers and switch to something else?
I was watching it while packing to leave to New York. I had it on my TV. So I was like in my room packing, watching Hundreds of Beavers.
It's not the way to watch
it. And then I had to focus on my packing and I had to deviate my attention from the several beavers to the packing. And then when I got on the plane, I hadn't downloaded it.
Oh.
So then when I touched down in New York, I had some free time when I got to the hotel. So I watched another like 5 minutes or so. And then I was like, I'm in New York. Why am I watching Hundreds of Beavers on my phone?
Fair, that's fair.
And then by the time I took off, I had also forgotten to download it. So I watched something else on the plane. Something which I obviously can't remember right now.
It's interesting you say this because I was going to sort of say this later, but I'm just going to say it now. This is, especially on my second watch, when I was watching it now, like during lunchtime, I realized that it's like, this is not a movie, despite the fact that there's very little plot. You can't really deviate your eyes from it because you're going to miss a setup for a joke because there's about 1,000 jokes.
Yeah.
And they don't always like draw your attention to it. And like a lot of times, like if I would have to rewind it because I was like, wait, how did they set up this joke? And you would have to kind of go back and it's just like you blink and you miss the setups. There was one moment where he's trapped a rabbit and then I think the raccoons have eaten the rabbit. Yeah. Mind you, so I think, Stephanie, what you need to understand is when we're talking about all these animals in the movie, it's people in animal costumes. That they apparently, they're full-size humans in animal costumes, like mascot costumes that they got from China.
Yeah, they're not like detailed costumes. No. Like they look like, imagine like a plushie that you would put on your bed, but like, you know, tall, like walking on its two hind legs.
Like a mascot, like so kind of fur body and then a giant head.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know if this makes me want to watch it more or less, but I'm going to watch it anyways.
We'll convince you. Well, actually, I don't know. I don't know how Alex feels about the movie. And even my opinion may have changed on a second viewing. We don't know. But so he captures a rabbit and then a raccoon eats it and all he left was a foot. But the foot is just it's a costume foot with a bone sticking out of it. And there's like all the guts are always like fluffies. It's always like styrofoam like flying out. And then like I think an angry raccoon sees him and starts attacking him, and so he takes the rabbit's foot and he rubs it, and then goes into the fight. And I didn't get. I was like, why do you rub the foot? And I was like, oh, he rubbed it for luck. You know how you rub a rabbit's foot? But it was just not like a normal rabbit's foot. It's like almost like a human size.
Yeah,
just jokes like that are what the movie is all about. And you really you have to kind of keep watching to get all the setups and understand everything. So we talked a little bit about what some scenes in the movie. We'll get more into that later. Do we want to set up like how the movie was made, who the major players are, things like that?
Yeah, let's do that. So we have we were having some fun pronouncing his name earlier. Mike Cheslick?
That sounds right.
What was our other pronunciation?
I think for him we're fine.
Oh yeah, we got him on the first one.
It's the star of the movie.
I heard him just referred to as Ryland Twos in a podcast.
Which I think we're going to...
Yeah, so we're probably just going to rock with that for the rest
but
of
it's,
the
But it's... Oh, we're going to rock with it.
We're going to rock with it.
You young kids. Have to make sure to cool out
before
we... Yeah, so we'll probably call him RT, you know, if we
RT.
Want to. Yeah,
okay.
Or Ryland Twos. And so these two gentlemen, they've known each other since high school, apparently. Mm-hmm. And they were they were at a bar and drinking beers, and they came up with the idea for this movie. Which I think we're going to go a little bit later again into what it actually is as far as, what it basically is or what style is emulating. But I should probably be pretty clear as we're talking about it.
Yeah.
But so they're based in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
They went out into the wilds and they shot the movie over the course of 12 weeks of shooting, but over 2 years. So like two winters, they went out into the woods and filmed in sub-zero temperatures with people dressed up as animals and Ryland Bricks and Cole Hughes as the hero of the film. And then after they filmed and basically almost froze to death, they went and the director also edited the film, which when you see how it all comes together, like the editing is monstrous. Like, I mean, that must have been such an undertaking of keeping everything straight with all the gags and things they're setting up and how they're building to things. And so he edited and he also did the special effects and all the special effects were done with After Effects.
Yeah, which is crazy because as like someone who's tried to use After Effects before, it's like it's not the hardest software to use. Like plenty of people are good at it, but the amount of stuff that they did in After Effects is just daunting. Like it's crazy to me to see the movie and be like, wow, that was After Effects.
Yeah. And they did it really well. I love the look of the movie. The effects are great, especially for, you know, you have to understand, as you may understand, dear listener, considering, you know, we're talking about that these are people in giant animal costumes. They're not going for realism here. They're going for like very warped, visuals. And it's in black and white. And it looks, apparently they shot it. They would have. It's a modern movie. They shot it on with video at 1080p, but they make it look like it's like grainy, super grainy 16mm film. Yeah, and then what was interesting was they put it together, took 2 years to edit and put it together before they finally got it out there. They started submitting it to film festivals. It got like great, reception at film festivals. They couldn't find a distributor, but as word of mouth kind of kept going, they said, you know what, we're just going to self-distribute. And so they actually would book it into theaters throughout sort of like the Northwest, upper Northwest, like between, obviously Wisconsin, Minneapolis. They went to places of Canada. I thought it was a Canadian movie the first time I watched it. I didn't realize it was actually Wisconsin until I saw the end credits.
Yeah, I also thought it was Canadian, like the main character, Jean Kayak, for like the first two times that I tried watching the movie. I thought it was Jean Kayak.
I still think it's Jean.
Is it Jean? I've heard them refer to it as Jean. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. It's just a silly name, period. Well, with the kayak at the end. No offense to our Jean and Jeans. I just had a meeting with somebody and his name is Jean Carlos or Jean Carlos. And I was like, I have no idea how to say it.
I think it'd be Gian Carlos.
Fuck.
Right? Because it's G-I-A-N.
J-E-A-N.
J-E-A-N. Yeah. Jean Carlos. Yeah.
I should have asked him. Oh, but he already introduced himself like last in December. So I couldn't ask him now. That'd be kind of weird.
Yeah, that would be weird.
Hey, I don't remember you. What's your name? Can you pronounce it for me? So we have Jean or Jean Kayak. And oh yeah, we were saying that sounded like it was Canadian. Close enough, but not quite across the border.
It's in that region.
Yes. Yeah. And so the movie got great notices. They would do these roadshow screenings and they said about 80% of them started getting sold out because the word of mouth was growing. They would do crazy things in the theater. I think Ryland Twos would wrestle the people in beaver costumes in the screenings and stuff like that. Sort of this cult phenomenon was built. And then was it April or July of this year, of 2024, excuse me, it got a streaming deal and it ended up on streaming. And that's when people started sort of watching it. And it is now very much available to watch.
On Prime.
Like I saw it on Tubi actually at first and then like now it's on Prime.
I think it was on Prime like 2 weeks after you told me about it on Tubi.
Was it that fast actually?
Yeah, well I mean I might be wrong, but I just remember you came in one day, you told me watch it on Tubi, and then by the next time you went to tell me to watch it, it was already on Prime and I was like...
That probably would have been the next day.
Yeah.
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 Because I wanted to talk to people. I really wanted to talk to people about this movie and like nobody was watching
it. Did Norman see it?
No, I think he would hate it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's just too much. Even though it's just, it's people in costumes, there's too much animal violence.
Cruelty. It's so funny because
it's so ludicrous.
Yeah,
you know,
and like you mentioned that they were like dressing up in the animal suits to go to the premieres. I saw an interview with Ryland Twos where he was saying that like people were like showing up for like the violence that was happening, like the WWE like fights between him and the beavers at the premieres than the actual movie, which I believe he called them Beaver Boys.
No,
yep. He said people were showing
up. Stephanie, you can laugh into the microphone. It's totally okay.
Beaver Boys, I like that.
I think it kind of ties into the fact that we all, when we heard the title of this movie, we thought it was something different from what it actually was.
And the fact that you wouldn't tell us any detail about the movie.
I know.
I was like, hey, Paul, what's Hundreds of Beavers about? Oh, just watch it.
No, because you have to watch it, like, clear, you know? Like, I had a little, only a slightly spoiler. I saw the poster for it, which is a great poster for the movie. It's hand-drawn. With him being Jean Kayak being chased by hundreds of beavers. Looks more like thousands. And I lost my train of thought.
That you weren't giving us any context.
Right,
about it.
Yeah. And so I watched it basically. Like, I just put it on like a Sunday morning. I was like, okay, I need to start watching some movies. So I put it on and I'm just sitting there like the first half hour. I'm like, what the fuck is this? It starts with a musical number, as you heard the piece that this started off with. And so I was just like, no. If anybody watches this, you just have to watch it. Now, with that title, everybody seemed to think that I was trying to get them to watch pornography. I was not. That this movie is not what it may sound like it is. So let's start there. I mean, I kind of gave it away. Like, I fell in love with it basically from the beginning. Not from the beginning. I mean, I was definitely smiling a lot through about the first half hour. And then as it kind of kept going, it just kept getting better and better and better. And then, like, by the finale, I was just like, this is the best fucking movie ever.
Yeah.
So that's how I felt on my first viewing. Let's leave the second viewing for later. Alex, what has your reaction been to your, you've seen it once now?
I've seen it once. I started it, watched the first 20 minutes, and then when I watched it again about 2 days ago to actually watch it all the way, I watched it all the way through from the beginning.
Good,
so I got to see the musical number twice, which I will say, if you just start the movie and you don't get through that musical number, you might have a hard time watching the movie, like, for the first, like, five, at least me. Like, the musical number was kind of tough for me to get through. Like, I was entertained, but I was like, what is happening? Like, I can't tell where this is going.
Yeah.
And then where it starts to pick up for me is, which I'm sure we'll get into it soon, is once he becomes Fur Trapper, Gene Kayak, 100%. That's when the movie just elevates to a completely
when the dimension. Actual credits roll a half an hour into the movie.
Yeah.
Still doesn't give us a title card. That comes later, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, it's, and that's kind of what happened the second time I was watching it, was I was a little, like, I knew it took a while to get going the first time around, but there was that sort of newness of, like, and the what the fuckness to kind of get me through it. But the second time, when I'm already kind of settled in, it was a little, it wasn't as funny, and it was a little tougher to kind of get through the second time. And I started to get a little bit disappointed, but then as we kind of get, as it builds and builds and builds, it's still, I still, by the end of the second viewing, I was like, no, I fucking love this movie.
Yeah.
You know, the credits of the actors and everybody involved does not come in until 33 minutes. The title of the movie comes in 75 minutes into the movie.
Yeah. And I feel like
that's such a beautiful build up to it, too.
I feel like that plays into something, which I don't know if you want to get on this topic yet.
Let's do it.
But this movie has a very video game-esque feel. And I mean, they did adopt a lot of things from video games, whether it's, you know, the selection screen and everything like that. And it felt like, I don't know, I remember it was like a big controversy when this game came out, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, when it came out, you don't get the, you play like, I think you play like 6 hours of gameplay or something. I might, that's not the exact number, but like 6 hours of gameplay before you get the title card for the game movie.
That's
funny. Yeah, you play like the whole entire beginning, and then once you finally set sail for like a new land is when you get the title card. So I felt like that was what was happening.
These guys must have been playing some Assassin's Creed. It's funny. Yeah. So having been a critic for a while now, my mind kind of works in sound bites. Mm-hmm. And so, like, when I was watching it, like, I was like, if I were to actually tell you what the movie is like, I call it Charlie Chaplin for the video game era.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's slapstick. Like, again, it's a silent movie for them in many respects. Like, yeah, there's no dialogue. There's just grunts
guttural sounds and music. The music was really good.
The music is really good. Do you want to describe the music? Like, what kind of stood out for you with the music? I mean, obviously, you can hear it from what we played at the beginning a little bit. But.
Yeah, I mean, the music it kind of has like a folky kind of vibe to it. Like that Midwestern sort of twang. I don't know. It just felt like...
Without going full country.
Yeah, it was cool. It had like a vintage feel,
I think,
which is fitting.
Yes. You know... If there's one thing that can make a comedy not funny, it's music that's telling you to laugh.
Yeah.
And the music here doesn't do that. Like, it really is just kind of, it's just there to kind of set the scene and kind of put you into the moment. But there's so many things in the movie where they are so clearly, like, they know you know this is a movie because everything is so ridiculous. So, like, there's even one part where he's being chased. They have a speeder bike chase at the end.
Yeah.
That's very much like the speeder bike chase from Return of the Jedi, but they're on sleds. It's Jean Kayak being chased by the beavers. But it's out in the open in there. And they drive by, and I'm not kidding. There was a for sale sign, like a realtor sign, that was just there in the shot. They didn't even get rid of it because they're just like, you know, it's not.
I didn't even notice.
I forgot about it, and then when I saw it the second time, I was like, I remember it from, and I forgot that. Yeah, so yeah, it is definitely very, like, it knows it's a movie, and so it's this weird or surprisingly natural mixture of the really old of silent film with the new, which is video games. And so that's why I'm like, no, it's Charlie Chaplin for the video game era. And it's funny because right before we started recording, Stephanie just out of the blue made a reference to some YouTuber, which I know nothing about. Do you want to tell us who that was?
I was referencing Markiplier, which he's known for doing Let's Plays for like horror video games. He was really, really popular in like 2014, 2016.
Ages ago.
Yeah,
ages.
Back in the olden days.
I do want to make sure that you all understood that it's horror, not horror movies.
The emo 13-year-olds will know who he is.
And you said the name fast, and what is the name?
Markiplier.
So is the last name Applier or is it Markiplier?
One word.
Markiplier.
It's no, one it's together. One word.
Yeah, Markiplier.
What the fuck does that mean? Markiplier?
I'm not sure.
Man, you kids, and you all watch this.
Yeah, I used to watch Markiplier.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I don't know how many emo 13-year-olds are in our audience, but
don't worry, there's no audience.
Yeah, there's no audience.
It's people in beaver costumes. So it was funny that Stephanie mentioned it because she said it's a Let's Play video, which is for me, I know what these things are, but I didn't know that was the name of it. And I literally saw the name pop up when I was doing some research for Hundreds of Beavers just now. And they were saying that it's very much like a Let's Play video. That it's kind of like, because you're watching this guy sort of learn and sort of improve. And as he improves, he makes more money. And as he makes more money, he buys different things to be a better hunter. And so there is this sort of like leveling up feel throughout the movie. See him as a video game character, like running through the map. And then and all like his hunting sequences where he's catching these beavers and killing them are very like Super Mario side scrollers, kind of just the goofy physics and the weird things that he does. It's almost like it's like an HUD, it does like a HUD and keeps you informed of what's happening in the movie. So one thing that made me laugh in the movie is that the beavers are set up as the bad guys, right?
Yes. Like, yes.
Like, and there's this sense of like that they're doing something ominous because every time he's walking past, there's many shots of him. There are a lot of repeat shots and there's a lot of shots of him as he's going back and forth in the forest and setting up traps and doing such where he walks past this giant beaver dam. And every time he does, and these beavers are working on it and it's just, and this ominous music plays, yeah. Like so they're doing something wrong. They're doing something bad. spoiler alert. So at the end of the movie, they're building a rocket ship to go into space. Yeah.
That's why they're taking all the wood from everybody.
The thing is, like, what's wrong with that? Like, they're not doing anything wrong.
Well, because it seemed like they were like the Empire in Star Wars.
Right.
Like, especially when he finally enters, without giving too much away, when he finally enters the beaver dam, it's like this great reveal. And he's so shocked because he just sees all these beavers moving all this wood around with like cranes and machinery.
The finale is absolutely marvelous. Like, it really made me think, and this is, everybody says this, right? But I think I am onto something here. It's very Miyazaki-esque.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, and I'm thinking like Miyazaki, it reminded me a lot of Castle of Cagliostro, which was like he directed that one before Ghibli was formed. It was one of the Lupin movies. It has a finale in a castle and he's going through like, you know, the gears of a clock and sort of sneaking around, like going through all these different passages and things like that. And that's very much like in this movie also. And actually, to that point, I got a quote from the director, Mike Cheslick, that I do want to read because it made me laugh. And I think this is the perfect time to read that quote. Okay, so he says, "I like it when a movie delivers a big climax, and I think every movie needs a third act castle infiltration scene. I'm sometimes disappointed. I'll go see a Noah Baumbach movie that I really enjoy, but then at the end, Greta Gerwig should be infiltrating a castle, and there's just nothing. So that's always disappointing to me." I agree 100%. I think every movie should end with a castle infiltration. Yes.
Didn't he do Marriage Story? Is that him? No. Yeah, that's like Marriage Story.
Yeah, Marriage Story. Francis Ha.
Yeah, Francis Ha. Marriage Story ending with a castle.
I think movies would all be better if they had a castle infiltration. So you kind of understand where these guys are coming from, you know, what their sense of humor is. And it is a marvelous, marvelous finale. I love the way the castle looks. There's all these chase scenes through the castle. There's a whole thing where they're on logs in the water system that's moving the logs through. And yeah.
The cop beavers or like the security beavers that are just like walking around with the nightstick ominously.
Or how about actually, now that you mentioned that, you know what I'm going to say.
Yeah, right? I know what you're going to say.
Halfway through the movie for no reason. So Jean Kayak is doing really well. He's building himself up. Like he goes from zero to hero. He's now trapping all these beavers. So suddenly two beavers dressed like Sherlock Holmes and Watson are going trying to figure out who's doing this. Start chasing him, basically.
They just keep showing up at like every like crime scene where there's just like a shape of a beaver in the snow. And they're just like standing around looking.
Trying to figure out what happened. And like they're shocked and dismayed by the horrible things he's done to them. So which kind of brings me back to, again, the beavers are set up as villains, right? Like as if we're supposed to be cheering. Another movie this reminded me of is Bad Taste, the Peter Jackson, his first film. Nobody
guys know. No, I haven't seen it.
Okay. Same kind of idea where it starts off kind of small, you know, kind of contained, and then it gets like really big, but like within a budget, you know? So like in that one, they're fighting aliens, and it's just this giant shootout in a house, like a two-story, three-story house that they probably had access to. Extremely gory and ludicrous. And like this kind of has that thing also where it starts kind of small and it ends up like really large. But and then it's also really gory, but it's gory because it's just felt and stuffings and things like that. Like at one point, so he falls in love with the furrier, as they call her.
Not a furry. Furrier.
The more you guys talk, the more I'm imagining like a furry movie.
It kind of is.
Yeah. It kind of animal suits.
Yeah. It kind of is a furry movie.
It might be, yeah.
I didn't consider that.
Yeah. But anyway, to your point.
Yeah, so she's a furrier, and so he brings the carcasses to her. And she like cuts them open, and it's always just like it's like a fur heart, it's like a plush heart, plush intestines. Yeah. So like you know, it's a lot of grossness, but it's also it's really cute. Like actually, she gives him the heart at one point to kind of show that she's in love with him. She gives him the heart, and then later in the movie, he opens up the heart, and there's like
worms,
there's maggots in there, but they're cute because they're little furry maggots. You can tell it's like a guy's finger like moving it. Yeah, so they have that, and they also have, like, the fish are – okay, hold on one second. We've just been sci-galed, and I don't want to tell the audience what that is.
No, we'll keep it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can guarantee that's a person who will not enjoy Hundreds of Beavers.
I mean, you never know.
I can't imagine anyone wouldn't like Hundreds of Beavers.
The movie?
Yeah.
Okay. Stephanie just gave me finger guns. You did? He looks like a guy who would enjoy Hundreds of Beavers. Everything is made clear with a good hey.
Okay, got it. Understood. So the fish that you were mentioning,
there's a ton of adorable, maybe not a ton, but there's a few adorable animals, and the flies, just like these little black with wings, but like they're just so cute, and it all leads to a lot of poop and puke and body fluid humor. Like he kills a beaver because he sneezes, and he's up in a tree and he sneezes, and his sneeze, like his expectorant comes out and then freezes immediately and turns into like an icicle, and then falls on the beaver and kills him.
Which, speaking of that kill, I was watching a featurette with Mike Cheslick, the director, and he was saying that it's literally like a stock image that they like a Getty stock image that they used of water for the nose.
I believe it.
And then they just like edited it and dropped it on it.
And that's the thing, that there's a very homemade feel to it, obviously, with what we're talking about, like with the maggots and all things. Yeah. Like they built those things, which again is just kind of going back to bad taste. That's what Peter Jackson did. Like when he built like the alien makeup, he actually would like bake the stuff, because you have to bake it to kind of make it set. He would do it like in his mom's oven, and stuff like that. So you can picture these guys will be doing the same thing. And yeah, like that's kind of the whole thing with the movie. It's using all these tools that we all have access to, but uses them in such a way that it's not just some generic, it's just not generic.
Yeah, it's not at all. It's like Buster Keaton meets, like you said, Chaplin meets like just two dudes that got drunk. And we're like, how can we make this even crazier? It sounds like a scenario that we would come up with here, like just like talking crap, like making stuff up, and then what if this happens and this happens? It sounds like that, but put to the screen.
Yeah, I think the other day, actually, Alex, you said something, because I was coming up with yet another plan of doing something stupid, I think, to harass Stephanie. I think we wanted to do something, and you were like, we always get these ideas, but then we never actually see them through. And I think Mike Cheslick and Ryland Bricks and Cole Hughes actually saw it through, and I'm proud of them for that. Now I wonder what it was that I was trying to harass Stephanie with.
I don't remember.
It was something where we wanted to gaslight you. We wanted to pretend, as we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I really like the homie feel of, like, movies, especially because, like, me and my older brother, we used to make films a lot as kids.
Yeah.
And we would spend hours just, like, making masks and making costumes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we would, like, film everything and, like, edit it on, like, my mom's, like, camcorder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, we used to just make movies and then watch them like constantly.
Yep.
So I always love movies that have like that feel, like they put like their whole like lives into it.
Yes. Yeah. So imagine that on a scale of like $150,000, which is what the movie cost. Yeah. You know, so it's like that, but like big. I think you'll enjoy it.
And it's hilarious because I was watching the interview with RT, as we're going to call him.
RT.
Yeah. Ryland Toombs. And he was saying that his dad like built a lot of the merchant stand where the fur trader guy is.
The father of the furrier.
Yeah. The father of the furrier. And the, was it the father? You know, for whatever reason, I thought that was her husband during
really?
The movie. Yeah. I don't
but then he offers her as a wife if he brings hundreds of beavers.
Oh yeah. I don't know.
I mean, they are out in the wild. Yeah, so they could be wild.
Who knows?
It's funny because it's just like, that's like age difference. Like to me, I'm just like, well, he's old, so he must be her father. And no. you're just like, I don't see nothing.
Yeah, I don't know. But
it is the backwoods.
Yeah, I didn't put it past them at least. But yeah, he was saying how in like an interview that I saw how like the hat that he wears at the beginning with the two tankards of Applejack.
Yeah,
it was made by his dad. His dad has like a bunch of scrap wood in his backyard, like a pile of scrap wood, and they were just like, "Oh, I need this in 2 days," and their dad would just throw it together
awesome.
And so cool. Like you just see it's like two people that just had a really strong vision and they saw it through all the way. And it just shows you like you could really put together a great movie if you just see it through.
And I think that's sort of like it's like the fantasy aspect that we enjoy also, where we're like, I could do that. Yeah. And then it's like, yeah, but you didn't. So it kind of, you know, if only I could see it through the way they do. And there is that sort of living vicariously through what they did. I think his father also did the music.
Really?
Yeah. Or at least a lot of it.
Super cool.
Yeah. There was something else you were saying. So when building that, I was going to bring it back to something, but I forget what now. We'll move forward and then we'll figure it out later.
Yeah. We'll circle back.
Yeah. No big deal if we don't. Okay. So I kind of want to go back to the idea of the beavers as villains, because the only thing that they do villainously and pseudo-villainously is that it's the one beaver who actually gnaws off the leg of his Applejack factory. That's what's making... So Applejack, I don't know what it is, but obviously it's a liquor of some sort.
Yeah, I guess it's like, I don't know. I thought it was like a spiked cider or something.
That's
like,
what I was figuring. Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah, so because Jean Kayak is... he's an Applejack...
Brewer,
yeah. Yeah. And that's what the first opening number is. And that's what we're talking about. Like, he has the helmet on. Like you know, and... In Super Bowl, like when you see like guys with the helmet with like beers in there, and then like the straws come out, and they go, he has that for Applejack because he's basically like a lousy drunk.
Yeah.
And all he's doing is just making Applejack and getting drunk off of it. And then he's actually giving the people he's selling it to are fur traders and trappers. And I missed this the first time, you know, I saw it the second time. So one of the fur trappers is pulling away a cart full of dead beavers, and there's one in there who's actually alive, and he escapes. And then gnaws the leg off his giant barrel of Applejack, and he's dancing on top of it. He's dancing, and it falls over, and then rolls down
his orchard.
That's what I'm looking for. Yeah, down the orchard, and then explodes for no reason and burns the whole place down. And then so he's left with nothing
in the woods
naked, and so he has to learn how to become like how to survive. And then once he survives and gets his first kill, and then a furrier makes his outfit for him, which is a giant raccoon.
A giant
dead raccoon is actually when the movie kind of gets, as we were saying, kind of when it kind of gets going.
Yeah.
And because then he ends up breaking his leg and is taken under the wing of an expert fur trapper who shows him the ways, and then they get attacked by a bunch of wolves in a fantastic sequence.
Yeah.
Where he basically gives, you know, basically says you take over in a sense before he's taken by the wolves. And so then he has to learn how to be an expert trapper, and he goes from there.
Yeah. And he learns pretty quick. Speaking of the wolves, I saw that they only had one wolf costume. They had to duplicate the wolves, which is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's great because like what's happening is, and I don't, we can't make the whole episode of just recounting funny things from the movie, but because the guy, the trapper has these dogs, which of course the guy's in dog costumes who are pulling his sled. And they couldn't make it. Like they play like Christmas music when he shows up and he's like wearing a Santa Claus hat because he has a big white beard.
Yeah.
And it's a terrible fake beard, but as with everything. And the running gag is like they hear wolves howling. And then at night, like when they have a little campfire going and it's just like black on the outside, the dogs are playing around, sitting around the table playing cards, so, like dogs playing cards, like that old.
The painting.
And the painting. Yeah. And then like these eyes will appear in the black, which are like these wolf eyes, and then they kind of, and then they always grab one of the dogs, and you know, and then that's it. And then they wake up and there's one less dog. And a running gag is also that every time now when the dogs start getting less and less, they start playing different forms of card games depending on how many are left over. So when the last one he's playing solitaire. Like there's so many jokes in this. But yeah, the stuff with the wolves was fantastic, just the way they did that. And like when they're climbing up the trees, they have like that kind of forced perspective with everything kind of I don't know how to describe it, but like it actually is in its own way a really beautiful movie.
Yeah. I saw a video that they actually, the cave that the wolves are supposed to be in, it's like half of it is like green screen, and they like flew drones through it to get pictures for the references for the, what's it called? Like the, you know, when you're like making, I'm forgetting the name. Why is the word escaping me right now?
Like a mat or?
No, yeah, like when you're drawing up your scenes, a storyboard.
Oh, okay.
For the storyboard, they went in and they flew a drone through the cave. And like for a lot of the, there's like overhead shots at one point that are done with a drone. Makes and sense. Then like edited to make it look. But they're, it's so crazy when you see the behind the scenes, because you'll see like they're just out in the middle of like this forest in the middle of winter, and there's just a random green screen that he's walking in front of. It's just, it looks so out of place.
And they were saying that also, like when like they said 9 weeks of the 12 weeks of shooting was outdoors, and then the rest was in green screen. And they're like, yeah, but don't think that was comfortable, because like you said, they actually put the green screens outdoors in the freezing temperature, and we're doing it out there also.
So kind
of just going back to that thing again, like the only thing the beavers did to him was that they gnawed the leg off the thing which destroyed his orchard. On the other hand, these people are all coming in and just killing all the beavers. So maybe that's why they built the rocket ship. They never say why they built the rocket ship, but I'm assuming they want to get away from the Earth and from us, because we keep fucking killing them.
Yeah.
But the movie plays it as Jean Kayak is the hero, and he's doing triumphant things. He gets into a giant brawl with the beavers at the end, and it's this great fight scene. It really is well done.
It was like a Tarantino, like Kill Bill fight scene.
I was laughing out loud in my office, because it's funnier because it, like, especially like when they do really violent things to the beavers, it's clearly nobody's in the costume and they're just throwing around an empty costume. So like one time he kicks the beaver and this empty costume flies into like a fireplace.
To call back to that scene, it's so funny when the beavers first capture him that they have him like on the, like on the table, and the guy comes in and you think that it's the fur trapper.
The fur trapper has come back to like that he's still alive. And then
he, all of a sudden they do a close up and his face is just a zipper.
I think this should be called Dad Joke, the movie.
It's so good.
It's all just dad jokes. It's things that make me laugh, that make us laugh, I think. But yeah, like it's just funny to me that it really is played as if it's like a hero versus the villains. And like the villains haven't done anything. They just...
And he's also terrorizing other animals too that weren't even villains in the beginning. Like the rabbits. The rabbits weren't doing anything.
Okay, we're going to do it again. There's a moment... This is when I was like, I like this movie. Early in the movie, he's trying to attract rabbits to come near him so he can kill them. And so he makes a snowman, and then he gives them women parts. He gives them boobs. And so at one point, like there's two rabbits walking next to each other, and he goes like, he does like a little wolf whistle, and then and the two rabbits look over and they see this snowman woman standing there, and they go, and they walk off, and then as they're walking off, you see they're holding hands. But it's what makes it funny that he starts flirting with it, so he gives it women parts.
And then
he gets like, he's like, I can attract women, rabbits with this, and so
I don't want to do it again, but there's just one point where the rabbits have gotten lured by the fake woman snowman by the snow woman a few times, but they've gotten away unscathed just barely a few times, and by like the third time they walk by, they see it again, and one of the rabbits is like looking at it like he's tempted, and the other rabbit's like trying to pull him away, like don't go, it's a trap.
We're so used to this already.
It was just so good.
Unfortunately, I think really there's just no actual like reading of this film. Like there's nothing we can actually talk about intelligently about it, like, because it's just gonna devolve into, and then there's this part and then there's this part.
It's just one of those movies where like you have to, I hate saying this because it's such a cliche, but it's like one of those movies you just have to watch to understand. Yeah. Like you can, I'm sure right now hearing us talking about it, like you're kind of getting like tidbits of what this movie's about, but you won't like fully comprehend it until you sit down and like actually see what happens.
Like I wish I could look into your head and see how you're picturing this, how it actually looks like.
It's more like I keep forgetting that these animals aren't actually animals.
Yeah.
So like every once in a while, the image in my brain switches from like animals to furries. Yeah.
It would be absolutely shocking if this movie were done with real animals. Like, I would hate this movie. Like, I would be disgusted by this movie, which I wonder if that's also something that they're trying to play with, if we're going to try to look into the text of the movie a little bit.
Yeah, maybe.
And that's why I kind of keep going back to the idea of, like, these beavers actually didn't do anything. Yeah. I think the movie knows this, and it's sort of like asking, like, maybe that is the subtext of, like, well, why do we assume he's the hero? Because he's a human like us, you know? And, you know, why... He doesn't save the day.
No, he doesn't.
But it plays it as such that it's like especially how, you know, when they're thwarted of their plan to escape the Earth, it plays it as if the Earth has been saved by something. And I'm just like, has it?
Yeah, you just saved everyone from the evil Earth Empire. I mean, the evil Beaver Empire. He saved Earth from the beavers. And also, I just want to I don't know if you caught this, but this movie, the whole thing was an explanation for how Lake Michigan flooded into Wisconsin to make Green Bay.
To make Green Bay.
Like they made that like the canon lore for yes. how Green Bay was formed.
Yes, because he destroys the dam that they're using to power up their giant rocket, and it causes Green Bay to be formed.
It's just so stupid. Like,
it's wonderfully stupid.
Yeah.
What else do we, is there anything else that we can, that we want to say? Is there anything else that kind of stands out to you about this movie?
There's not much that stands out. I think something that's going to go a little like underrated just because it's such like slapstick comedy was Ryland Towns' performance. It was like a performance where you really had to sell what you were doing.
Yeah.
I don't know if he did his own stunts or anything like that.
Yeah.
He did his own stunts. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they were saying that like that was one of his, like one of his things that was so appealing was that he can fall down really funny.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And so that was one of the reasons why Mike Chesley works with him. And yeah. It's sort of like, he's like, yeah, he can fall down funny. This will work.
Yeah. And it's like, he just is always falling or always just making these like.
No, it's a great, great performance.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a really good performance. And like, it's not going to get nominated for anything. I mean, Oscar noms are out already.
They don't
yeah.
like comedies.
Yeah, they don't like yeah. comedies, especially something like this. I mean, I doubt that.
They have yeah. the excuse that the movie actually came out, it had its first screening in 2022.
Okay, yeah.
So it has the excuse to be like, well, it's not actually from 2024, so they can't consider it.
Right, right.
But even if it had been, they would not have.
Yeah, they would not have.
No.
But it, like he had a really great performance. Not an Oscar-worthy performance, obviously, I mean, but it was good, yeah.
I would say yes. I'm like, yeah? a good performance is a good performance.
That's true,
and,
yeah.
And slapstick is really difficult to do well. Even again, like the way I'm describing it, it doesn't like, that's like, the whole joke with the rabbits,
yeah,
like it's the gay joke itself. It's not terribly funny. It's his reaction that I couldn't sell it right. It's his reaction where he just looks and goes, huh,
yeah,
that I absolutely loved. Like it was just like, you know, it's so modern.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't expect it from then, and you would also expect like a gay panic joke where it would be like he would almost be offended or yeah. or scared, and he just goes, huh,
yeah,
I love that, and he just.
And there's another gay joke at the end of the movie, at the very final
Tell
scene.
Me.
The movie at the end ends on a gay note, and you have to see it to understand it. It's just like...
We're not going to say it yeah, because there's so much it. Leading up to
right,
it,
right.
and at least that last shot, which
but
is fantastic.
It's just so out of left field, and like you don't expect it at all.
I actually forgot about it.
And then it explains so much when you look at it in retrospect. It explains a whole, like... Yeah, you just have to see it to understand, but it's just, yeah.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
Because now I remember how upset he was when the tracker was killed.
Exactly, yeah. Now you see why. Why he was in shambles.
Paul's losing it, just so you know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, like there's so many different things happening that like, you know, like I said, it is that sort of patient, like there's a lot of setting up of jokes and smartly, again, you can't start at 60 miles per hour, at 100 miles per hour, you have to kind of, you know, rev up to it kind
yeah.
of slowly, and they know how to do that. But yeah, like that can sort of make the first half hour or so like a little bit, what can I say? Boring is a stupid word. It's a boring word.
It
because there's
like,
still funny things
yeah.
happening, but it just...
He's like ringing out a log.
They're ringing out the log. Like he pulls out a log and like after everything blows up and... And he slaps it against the tree, and it's, like, full of water. And so he's like, oh. And then he twists the water out of it.
Like a sponge.
Like a sponge. Just we have to stop.
Yeah, we need to stop. We're giving away the whole movie.
And also, like, the movie does it better than
yeah.
we do. But I'm glad you brought up his performance, because it really is a fantastic comedic performance, which is something that I think we don't treasure enough.
Yeah.
He even said himself, like, he based a lot of his movements on Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense.
It does.
Yeah, like, another guy who kind of... You know, still keeping the tradition of slapstick and silent humor alive. So I'm looking forward to whatever these guys have to do next.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. I really don't – I have no idea where they're going to go next, because they could just surprise us completely and just do like something completely different from this. Like
a drama.
Yeah, they could do a drama. And it would probably work because they have that dedication. It's like I said
yeah.
earlier, like they had such
the
a
word.
Strong vision and such a dedication that yeah. they really just – Even though their budget was only $150,000, which, I mean, for a movie like this is pretty
I would like that
good.
Amount
yeah.
of money, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For all these the special effects and costumes
yeah.
and everything, yeah.
Yeah. And even, like, the press tour that they've been doing, like, they've really committed to the bid. So
yeah.
when somebody can commit to a bid like that well, you just know that their next work is going to be good, regardless of what it is.
Yeah.
So
let's just hope it doesn't take another 5 years for us to get it.
Yeah, because their last one was 20. They did one in 2018, and then now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, maybe now they'll get more money since the movie did well. And I think it had like 90 something on Rotten Tomatoes, which I don't trust Rotten Tomatoes very much. But
No, the critical reception has been really good, and not just sort of guys like me who destroy blogs. It's like actual published critics.
Yeah.
I feel like it's really hard to get a good score on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, at least in my experience, like a lot of movies that like I would like I like or I know a lot of people appreciate usually has like the lowest scores on Rotten Tomatoes.
Tomatoes gets tricky because they have the critic score and then the audience score. And it's like, now that we're on this topic, Emilia Perez, I don't want to talk about it too much because I haven't seen
it yet. Let's talk about it. We're done with Hundreds of Beavers.
Yeah, we're done. I haven't seen it yet. But I mean, I was looking at it and I think like the critic score is like up in the 70s and then the audience score is like 32. Mm. And it just took away like the most amount of nominations at the Oscars. So.
I would look more at that number. What's interesting to me is that the critics are only at 70 when you consider it. That's pretty low for a critics. Film that's winning. Yeah, from critics for a film that's winning a bunch of or nominated for
13 Oscars, the most.
I'm angry.
Yeah.
Have you seen it yet?
No, I'm not. I haven't seen it.
No, but yeah, so why am I angry?
I have to watch it. I don't know.
Yeah. It's weird because it's the only way I can defend it is like I think when enough people say the same thing,
right,
you're sort of like, that's probably what it is, but very fair. Like, I need to shut the fuck up because I need to watch the movie before, because I can't say for sure.
I kind of feel like we should watch it because I do that a lot too. Like, I'll just have like a perception of a movie and have like not watched it and then refuse to watch it.
Yeah.
And then I'll watch it like years later and be like,
that wasn't that bad.
That wasn't that bad.
That was actually pretty good.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, I always talk about this movie, but Babylon, which came out not that long ago, had a terrible critic score, a terrible audience score. And I think it's like, I still think it's going to come back in a few years and people are going to be like, wow, that movie was a classic. We didn't appreciate it at the time.
That one seems like it, I mean, because it was also such just, it's that typical thing also where it costs so much money and made so little money.
Yeah.
And in our culture, we sort of equate that to artistic failure, which does not necessarily mean the same thing.
Right.
It's weird. I've noticed that what I've kind of been gauging a lot of my reactions on is what people in my film critics group say. Like, so what I would say with Babylon is that there were people who were like, bro, this movie's really good.
Yeah.
Emilia Perez, like everybody. Everyone and did. Like our critics group, it's funny because we have the snootiest of the snooty. We have the shills for the studios who just want to get free shit and you know, go to screenings and do interviews and sort of be seen with celebrities. And then you have me somewhere in the middle who's like, yeah, I'd like to do both.
Yeah.
And like nobody had anything good to say about Emilia Perez. And like they were just like venomous against it. And it just sounds like, I don't know, again, I need to see it for myself and sort of before I say anything.
Yeah. My skeptical mind wants to tell me that all the nominations come from like some kind of like political Oscar like thing.
Remember, I mentioned like the Hollywood Reporter interviews like five, you know, again, 5 out of 1,000. But it's clear that, you know, the way that people vote, it's has very little to do with the movie itself.
Yeah.
And if I have to be honest, if I'm going to be honest, so like our critics group, we have our own awards. And when you take into consideration like how I vote, you know, I'm also like, there's just personal shit that gets in there, you know, like you cannot help it. And there's just things that like, there's things that I love that I'm going to champion over other things. So it's sort of like I love animation. So if there's an animated movie that I think is great, I'm like, no, fuck everything else. I want that one to win, you know, even if maybe there is a better one. I'm just like, yeah, but I love this. So we're all just human beings. And I think we just need to sort of take it as it's just interesting to see where things are in that time. You know, like the thing I always remember is, you know, when Dances with Wolves came out, we all loved it. Like, I mean, it was such a phenomenon. When it was nominated for 13 Oscars and won 8 or something ludicrous, like we were all like, that's awesome, you know? And I still am there. I still love the movie. But now there suddenly is this whole thing. Well, like, well, they stole it from Goodfellas. And I'm like, you know what? Goodfellas is still Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Whether it won an Oscar or not, it doesn't fucking matter, you know? And like, it reflects the time. Mm-hmm. At that time, people loved Dances with Wolves. Critics loved Goodfellas. It just didn't have that same impact at that time. We grew up with it. Everybody wins, you know what I mean? But it's interesting to see where we were at that time, and that's what, you know.
Yeah. I think that's one that I definitely have to see before I go talking any more trash about it, for sure.
Same.
But
I'm just not looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have so many movies to watch. We have to watch all the movies that Stephanie has watched and loves so we can tear them apart.
Yeah. So right now my list is looking like Baby Girl.
That's the first one.
Yeah, that's the first one.
I think Substance really should be our first one.
Yeah, Substance probably.
Because I've been wanting to see that.
Yeah.
I need to watch it again. After I watched it and loved it, now I hear everybody else watching it and loving it.
How do you feel about that? Do you feel territorial, like I was here first? Or are you happy that people are experiencing what you experienced?
I think I only get territorial if I loved something like years ago and everybody hated it, and then like years later a new generation picked it up and loved it.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Because then I'm just like, well, you don't get it because you weren't
there. Yeah. I liked it.
It's not yours. It's mine.
I think with this movie, like, there was such little time between like when it got popular that now I'm just like, yes, like, watch it, like, give them their money.
Yeah.
You know, because at least like they're watching it, like, you know, like, I think it's coming back to theaters.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, they'd be stupid not to.
I think they're doing another run right now. Yeah.
So, like, give the director the money that she's owed, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you're watching it, like, years later, like that.
Was she nominated for Best Director or no?
I'll have to get back to you on that. Yeah. I do know, it got Best Original Screenplay for sure. Demi Moore got nominated for...
as she should.
Best actress.
Best picture, obviously. I just love the fact that a horror movie is, and I'm saying horror movie, is getting all these big nominations.
Especially body horror, which is very...
I think the reason why I like the movie so much is it kind of gives me the same vibes as Beau is Afraid.
Okay.
And that movie bombed so incredibly hard.
Yeah.
Which you couldn't expect anything but that. I mean, it's a weird, a psychedelic freakout movie, so like people aren't, you know, that's not like mainstream.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
But I feel like this movie is like, it has that same like psychedelic-ish like body horror vibe, but it's just digestible enough for people to understand it.
Okay.
I think Beau Is Afraid goes too far in the other direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I do love because it's interesting, you know? But I think this one's digestible. So I like that people are using it as like an entry point into body horror.
Okay.
Because it's helping them get more comfortable with the idea of it rather than just like head diving right into the genre.
Into like a Cronenberg movie or something.
Yeah.
So update, she is nominated along with James Mangold, Sean Baker, Jacques Audiard?
Yep.
And Brady Corbett, Brutalist.
I hate to focus on a negative. I think it's absolutely... You're going to love this one. Alex, you're going to love this. I find it absolutely disgustingly vulgar that James Mangold is nominated for anything because he's a piece of shit and fuck that guy. Okay, he's made some good movies.
Yeah.
But no, he's made some okay movies. He's made some very watchable movies, but he has made some absolute shit that people, well, in some cases, people love. The Logan. People love Logan. I think it's shit. And I think we're all on the same page on this one, that like Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny is just an affront to the character.
But Walk the Line was good.
I thought that was dull as shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no... That did nothing for me.
A Complete Unknown was just phenomenal. You guys have to watch it.
I have not seen that one yet. And I did like his remake of 310 to Yuma and...
Okay.
What was
that? That was the one with Christian Bale?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I did like Ford versus Ferrari in it as a dad movie.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Yeah. He's one of those that has an interesting, like a weird filmography where it's like some stuff has nothing to do with his other work.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely eclectic, but that actually makes me like him even less, because I think when you're too eclectic, it just means that you don't actually have...
A style?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. You don't actually have, like a real interest in something. You're just sort of like, I can do this, I can do that. And I'm like, you know, it's one of those, like, I know a little bit of everything, but a lot about nothing.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't like that as much. And I think for him also, and this is the last I'll say about James Mangold, is that when he's interviewed, he's so fucking pretentious. I mean, I remember when he was like just offhand remark he made. He was talking about Logan, and he was like, "Yeah, we're trying to make Ozu with mutants." And I was like, "You need to go sit in like a box and close it." You know, like anyway. Hundreds of Beavers was great. Beavers,
yeah. So we have to do. I don't know about you guys, but I have to watch The Brutalist, Conclave, Emilia Perez, Substance, Baby Girl, and I want to watch Flow. So I think I'm gonna throw this out there now.
Not just you want to watch Flow, you have to.
I have to watch Flow.
Flow is awesome.
A movie about a Latvian fox. Latvia? Where are they from?
It's a Latvian film. Yeah, we don't know where it takes place. Alex seems to think that it looks like a fox, but it clearly is a cat.
Anyway.
A very cute cat.
I'm gonna throw this out there now on the air. I did this last year. I made a prediction list of who I think was gonna win.
Oh, go for it. Yeah.
This is good. I think we should throw together our prediction list once we've watched everything before the Oscars.
Okay.
And come March, I think we should recap and see who won.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. So by when should we choose? Just when should we make our predictions?
Anytime end of before, February? Yeah, end of February. Whenever we all get a chance to watch the things that need to be seen.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to watch Nickel Boys. I mean, maybe if I get around to it.
It's not going to win anything. So yeah. You don't have to.
And the more I look at Anora, I don't think it's going to win anything. But
that was
we'll
my
see.
Question. Is it like a who we think is actually going to win or who we hope wins?
No, who you think is actually going to win. Like
we
you're trying to win the
okay.
competition.
We should
do both. Yeah.
We could do both, like who we think is going to win and who we wish would win.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know for a fact all the movies I really like are not, they're not going to win.
Yep.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Not at the Oscars.
There's honestly, there's the group of people who don't win, who deserved it, is often bigger than the group that actually won. So like it's time is the only real judge of these things, and you know the ones that stick around are the great ones.
Yeah.
The ones that get the Oscar don't necessarily reflect that.
Yeah. And let's hope that Hundreds of Beaver sticks around and stands the test of time.
I think it will.
Yeah.
I think it's just going to keep kind of growing. I like how you brought it back to Hundreds of Beavers. That was great.
That was good, right?
That was very good. I think that it's you know, as we said, it's a cult movie, and all we can do is just sit here and talk about the scenes and how much we loved it and just laugh. I had a great time actually doing this, just recount. This is kind of why I wanted people to see, because I'm like, you have to laugh with me. You can see it, Stephanie. You have to laugh with me because this is hilarious.
Uh-huh.
So to kind of go with tradition, or the tradition we're trying to build, we end each show using our show's title to let you know whether we think you should watch this movie or not.
Yeah.
So let's take a moment to prepare, because it is funny. It's a subtle change. But so on three.
Okay.
We're Stephanie, I'm sorry, you have to sit this one out. This is the only one you will sit out from now on, and you will make sure you watch the movies before you join us.
I will watch.
Yes.
Them. Okay. How hard are we going here? Like, are we yelling into the mic depending on
whatever your heart tells you, as long as it's not filled with felty maggots.
Good call back.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
Watch this. Okay. That was good. Watch this. No, that was weird. Yeah. Like that.
What was that? Let me see. Because there was like a little lilt at the end. Like you're singing an Irish jig. Oh, you should watch this now.
If we ever have an Irish audience, they're going to leave.
Terrible Irish.
Oh, Paul.
No, my name will be Seamus that day.
I love it.
Do we want to try that again, or are we happy with it? I'm still not sure how I want to say it. Hold on. Let me concentrate. Let's put some concentration music.
Oh, wait. Hold up. I'll put the
good.
Music from, yeah.
It's gonna, that's going to put us in the mood. Yeah.
Yeah. Turn up the Bluetooth over there.
Jeez, that was loud.
We could do it over the music, maybe.
Yes. When I lower the music to nothing, that's when we say it.
Okay.
Okay.
Watch this.
You gotta fucking watch this.
I was trying to do the voice they were doing in the song.
And okay. On that note,
that was good.
Goodbye, everybody.
Play us out.
Play us out.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Stephanie.
Goodbye.
There we go.